Hi, this is Allison Sheridan bringing you another installment of the NoSillaCast podcast. Today is Saturday, September 24th, and this is show number 9. We have a very, very special NoSillaCast today because we have a special guest star, Ron Birch, aerospace engineer by day, photographer for the group Berlin at night, and 24/7 geek like me. Welcome, Ron. Say hello to our throngs of subscribers to the NoSillaCast.
I'd be happy to, Allison, and thank you for having me here this wonderful afternoon.
It's nice to see you today. Nice little fall afternoon we're enjoying, I guess.
Yeah, the fall weather's finally hit Southern California, and we're just having a ball.
So I asked Ron what kind of things he might like to chat about today, and it looks like he's prepared a little agenda for our meeting today.
That's true. So when Allison mentioned that she might want to do an interview, she asked about topics, and so I had a glass of wine and went through my brain, had a stream of consciousness moment, and came up with this particular list. So I think I'll let Allison go ahead and read it.
All right. First, we're going to talk about, is it a bus error? Then how to record a podcast, navigation in the digital world, stuff we could really use if it just existed, a short piece on string theory, perhaps a very short piece on string theory, holes in the space-time continuum, useful versus pretty technology, and, of course, penguins.
That pretty much covered it for me.
All right, Ron, so I was working the other day, and my computer came back and said I had a bus error. What does that mean?
No one in creation really knows what that means.
Why is that?
Because there are a lot of people who, once you tell them you had a bus error, will say there's no such thing as a bus error.
So there is no such thing as a bus error.
It's open for debate.
All right. On to topic number 2. So we were going to talk about how to record a podcast. For Christmas this year, Ron searched out, or was it my birthday?
I think it was your birthday.
Ron searched out a book that was recently published by Extreme Tech. It's called Podcasting, the Do-It-Yourself Guide. And it's written by Todd Cochran, who does the Geek News Central podcast.
This was one of the first books that was published, and what I was looking for, Allison, was something that would be very comprehensive, so that as she evolved her podcast and became more and more professional, the book would carry along to the end. So
Ron and I spent some time last weekend going through some of the interesting parts as you get deeper into the book. The beginning is a little bit more basic, and since we'd done a little bit of podcasting and certainly subscribed to a lot of podcasts, what we found interesting was the section of on how to set the levels. So I've been recording, Ron, with a headset microphone, and then occasionally with my eyesight like we're doing today. But you wanted to help me get to a little bit higher level with the recording quality.
Well, I just know that from my experience with some other audio gear that it's always nice to try and set up the recording levels so that you have the best overall performance and dynamic range. And so I noticed that the book had some information in there, and I thought it might be worthwhile to go through it because I hadn't really thought about it myself in recording on a computer, and I figured it might be a little different than if you're in a studio with audio gear.
Yeah, I think it's probably pretty obvious to our guests that we don't have audio gear here in a sound stage based on some of the environmental issues I've been having, like my son hitting me in the head with a pillow in the middle of a podcast. But I liked what we did in Audacity. It turns out there's a way of removing noise. And so one of the things we learned from the book was how to record 10 seconds of dead air and then use that as a sampling of how much noise, ambient noise, is already in the background. And then you select your recording and you tell it to you basically subtract that noise level. And that was kind of cool.
Yeah, in fact, I was a little surprised. I've used the program Amadeus on the Mac before, and it has a little bit of signal processing for audio. However, after Allison mentioned Audacity, I went and downloaded that because mainly it was free.
Open source, gotta love it.
Open source. And I was actually a little surprised at how many tools it has for post-processing audio, and one of them is this noise suppression technique that works very well.
Now, you wanted me to do reverb throughout this whole thing, but I voted you down, Ron.
Well, you know, after we record this, there's always time.
And always processing power to go with, right?
One of the best things about podcasting is that, unlike being on the radio in real time, people have no idea how many times you screwed this up before you actually got the final one on the air.
No, but Ron, wouldn't some of the better podcasters say that they don't do any editing at all? I mean, you listen to Adam Curry, man. You can tell he doesn't edit anything out because he's made his belches to be part of his podcast, right? His famous Senseo belches.
Yeah, actually, that would be a topic all into itself, is kind of the philosophy of podcasting and how podcasters feel about, doing it live versus Memorex, and whether if you go and post-process it, that, you know, takes something away from the spontaneity and the trueness of the show or something. You know?
I'm betting that Rush Limbaugh probably post-processes his, right? One of the things I like about Adam Christensen, who does the MacCast, actually was that I found out that he does edit his podcast. And the way I found that out was there was a particular section where he was having a bad day where he just kind of kept stumbling over the words. And finally, he just got really frustrated and he said a naughty word. And in the next podcast, he apologized for that because he had intended to go back and cut it out like he always does. So evidently he gets pissed off and he says foul things, but he really wants it to be a family-friendly podcast. And I appreciate people who make that effort. I mean, we all say bad words once in a while, and in podcasting you can clean up your act and you can keep it clean by doing that. And I almost liked him better because I knew he didn't mean to. You know, he wanted to be a good guy and he tried to and he just screwed up. And that kind of made him a little more real, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think that's the other thing, is that the tools now are simple enough that people can go in and they can do things that may not be complex, but they can do fade-ins, fade-outs, they can do some nice trimming and editing and get it kind of the way they want without having to spend hours. I think back in the days where, of course in film they still do it, you have people with magnetic tape or film and you're sitting cutting it together and literally splicing something.
With tape.
And here cut and paste has a lot different meaning.
Yeah, I did cut out. There was a section where I just really made I didn't make a mistake. I was drippy in a section in the last podcast. Actually, it was the opening of the podcast. I just started out by going, hi, it's Allison's podcast. You know, it was nasty. And so I just went back and recorded another one and pasted it over it. And it came out fine. I don't know. It wasn't that exciting when I was done, but it was better than the first time. Trying to get a little more energy going today, so I took a nap first.
All the better.
So another thing that Todd Cochran talks about in the book, and I'm probably going to take his advice, is he's done a lot of changes to the way he names his podcast. And in particular, he talks about the different conventions that he walked through, and I liked it because he said, I did it this way, this way, this way, and this way. And the reason I changed it four times was because my customers, my listeners told me that it was a pain the way I was doing it. Like, if you name it too long, it won't fit on the MP3 player screen. And if you don't put the date in a certain format, it won't sort correctly on the computer. So you need it to keep some convention there. So I'm probably going to change it up a little bit. Maybe I'll jump to the way he does it.
Yeah, it's funny, but when you first get into something, you're just thrilled that you can do it at all. And then, after that, as you start getting recognized by people, then you start getting that constructive, hopefully, feedback. And then they, they basically tell you where you're still screwing up.
Right. Well, that kind of leads into the fact that I'm getting close to launching my new website. It's going to be called podfeet.com. It's actually technically up, but the content still points over to my other location. I'm trying to figure out how iTunes is going to take the shift, whether it'll just follow me automatically when the URL changes, or whether I have to re-register, or what I have to do. But I do have email open now that is available to the masses. You can write to me at allison@podfeet.com.
Very good. Well, given what I've heard from Adam Curry's podcast and a couple of others, probably anything you do will upset iTunes for some period of time. It seems inevitable.
If nothing else, I'm sure I'll have bandwidth issues because, the throngs, they're just multiplying, Ron.
Yeah. I mean, the only hope you have is that first day you don't crash the server.
Well, I've got 7 gigabytes a month I can use, so I'm hopeful that I would one day be hit with a $1,000 bill because my podcast was too popular.
Well, at that time, of course, you'll cop out and you'll sell out and you'll start selling, ads. And
oh, there you go.
The first part of it will be, hello, I'm Allison, and welcome to the,
General Mills podcast.
Right, pets.com sponsored podcast.
Really? Well, I do know that my listenership has gone up by two. I found out that my my cousin Anne Marie has subscribed to my podcast, and not only is she listening, she made CDs and gave them to her boss, and he's listening too. So here's a big shout out to Fenton, Michigan.
All right, Fenton, Michigan.
Put a pin in the map, Ron.
Well, you know, that's the way it starts, though. I mean, it's reminiscent of that. I think it was a commercial for one of these server companies or what have you, where the guys are getting online with their new company, and they're all sitting around the computer watching their order tracker, and it starts out, you know, 1, 2, 3, and they're all thrilled. I think 10, it was FedEx, actually.
15.
Then, right, and then the next thing you know, it spins up to a couple hundred thousand.
And they're like, ah! Well, one of the problems with Ron and I is that when we get together talking, we just start, we've been known to talk till 1 or 2 in the morning because we just get going. So I hope this ends up being as interesting to our listeners as it seems to be to us. So what about navigating in the digital world, Ron?
Well, I threw that in only because I was recently having a conversation with a friend of mine about the numerous ways, the proliferation of ways to communicate with people nowadays, and the fact that people seem to be having a little bit of difficulty with that. Terms like email abuse and things like that. The whole idea of, you know, whether or not you answer your cell phone when you're in a restaurant, and just how do you handle it? I mean, I need to tell you something vitally important. Do I send you email? Do I page you? Do I
text message
you? Instant message you? Just call you on the phone, drive over to your house, you know. I mean, what is the way? It used to be you pretty much had a telephone and, you know, that was about it.
Maybe paper mail.
You got the BlackBerry, you've got, you know, all these different things. And, you know, as he pointed out, you know, the telephone's been with us for 100 and something years, and it probably took 20 or 30 years for people to just figure out the etiquette of how to use the phone.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to my buddy Harry the other day about, or today actually, about this. Harry's 85, and we were talking about the differences between ways people communicate today. And one thing I've been thinking about at work, and specifically, is that we've got a real age gap at work. We got a lot of people from 40 to 60, and we got a lot of people from 20 to 30, but nobody between 30 and 40 at all. And it's probably more like 25 to 45. There's really nobody at work, and I'm, because we're in the same industry, I'm sure you see that. But you've got the elders who are just barely making our way through email, and then now we've got these 20-year-olds who believe in working in instant messenger. And the old people all look at the young people as just they're just screwing around, and that they're just you know, messing around because they're playing on instant messenger. But then the youngsters look at us as just a bunch of Luddites, you know, that we can't get with today's technology.
Yeah, and I find that at my company too, where just recently they deployed instant messenger type client within the company.
Which one did they do?
They used the Microsoft Messenger.
MSN Messenger?
MSN Messenger, okay. And they tailored it for our intranet.
Nice.
And it's very nice, and I've been trying to use it. There are a handful of people who have adopted it because we're in the same situation. We don't have very many people who are in the 20s. But it was interesting that at least the company was forward-looking enough that they recognized there must be a need. Maybe the IS company, part of the company, is getting a lot of requests or, you know, complaints.
Right.
But it is just interesting that now that's just one other way. I mean, you can send a file to somebody that way. And in fact, it's better in my company because since it's considered a more direct protocol, there isn't a file limitation like there is on our email.
Oh, okay, nice. One of the things I really like, far be it from me to say anything nice about Lotus, but we use Lotus Same Time, and we also have Lotus Notes, or the Same Time Meetings and the Same Time Chat. So meeting is where you can share a piece of information, like I can bring up a PowerPoint document, and you can see it on your computer. But it's kind of clumsy for, like, if you got a bunch of people coming at 3 o'clock, you know, you can set up a meeting room, and you all go in there, and you share it together. But what's cool about the Same Time Chat is that I can pop up Same Time and I see that you're on, and I call you on the phone. I say, hey, Ron, I want to talk to you about this spreadsheet we've been working on. And I can say, join me in the Same Time. And I click one button and I can invite you to a meeting. You accept, and boom, you can see on your screen what I've got. And that is just such a time saver, because instead of saying, you know, look in cell G4, and you say $638, I go, no, that's G5. No, G4, go over one. You know, it's like, oh, man. But I can just point right at it. You can see the formula I'm looking at. You can see what the problems are. And it's just a great tool.
Yeah, and I think our tool that's equivalent to that is WebEx.
Oh, see, now WebEx is better because that's cross-platform. We don't use that. Of course it's not cross-platform. We have to pick something completely proprietary.
Well, we're getting into that now, and people are using it a lot more. And that is a useful thing. And again, part of it is just getting the folks who aren't introduced to it, get them on board. And then the second part of it is really kind of coming up with this, I call it etiquette or something that allows you to kind of have a feel for what kind of message you're sending, what the right medium is for it, you know?
It's funny you would use the word etiquette. That's exactly the word I used with Harry today when I was talking about it. One of the way I navigate the digital world in this particular problem is I try to think of the other person as my customer. So if I was going to talk to you, I would think, okay, Ron is the kind of person that is most comfortable listening in, talking and conversing in, Ron needs a little more water, Steve. Could you give him another glass of water? Thank you.
That's Steve, our cabana boy.
Bringing us drinks. So, anyway, what I was trying to say before the water incident was I look at you as someone who would probably be best at communicating our competitive boy says he's spitting the water. You would most easily communicate in email, because I know that you're real busy, you're difficult to get a hold of during the day, so I think of you as needing email. So I would email you. However, my daughter prefers to communicate in instant messenger, so since she's my customer, I would communicate with her in instant messaging. At work, I tell people that I get too much email, so they really should communicate with me. If they want me to get, if their real goal is to get a hold of me, they need to leave me a phone message. So you got to look at each person, I think, and say, what is the way they're going to be able to hear me? Because they're your customer, so you got to think of it from that perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to look at it. One of the things that I find is sometimes I kind of get paralyzed when I think about it, because one of the things is also expectation that really enters into this. The expectation of people when someone sends me an email, in the past, if someone sent you a letter, they didn't expect to hear from you for a few days.
Now, people
send you an email, and unless they know you, like you're saying, if they know your habits, they know your regular schedule, that kind of thing, then they might understand that you may only read your email once a day. Now, most people probably in business aren't that way, but there could be some people. Some people may, not get their voicemail that often. And so the amount of delay in the urgency of the message has to enter into that somehow. And you're right. You have to know who you're talking to really get the efficiency. Otherwise, you may end up with your message in the dead letter office.
Yeah, and I like that you bring up the expectation thing. Like I had somebody actually send me an email changing the building location of a meeting a half hour before the meeting. It's like, I'm sorry, no fair. You can't have an expectation of me to be reading my email less than 15 minutes before I have to drive somewhere. And the worst part was the person was moving it from a distant building to the building I was in, which meant that I drove to the other building to find out that a half hour before they'd moved it to, 6 feet from my office.
Exactly. So that's why, I can understand, phone versus versus instant message versus what have you. What I find interesting, though, too, is that when I talked with a couple of people about the instant messaging at work, I found that several of the people were basically down the hall or just across the floor from one another. And I kind of said, how's that working, And one of the things that was interesting was that they were leveraging one technology against the other, basically, because they were sending a quick instant message to somebody to find out if they were sitting at their desk.
Since and then they would walk down and talk to them?
And then they would either walk down and talk to them or make the phone call. But since they were already sitting on working on their computer, the quickest way to do that was just to pull up the messenger and send them a quick text message.
Interesting. One thing I think we have to consider everybody needs to do, but geeks in particular need to do in navigating the digital world, is to understand that every single person has a different level of geekness. All right. So, like at work, we had a same time awareness campaign because nobody was using it. You know, mm-hmm. there was this, the IT people use it, and you know, geeks used it, and 20-year-olds used it, but nobody else did. So this guy that I was working with said, "Okay, well, I'm going to go down to this one organization's. I'm doing a briefing on same time awareness. It's going to be great." And he gets down there, and there's no Ethernet connection in the room. There's no computer. There's no projector, and there's no Ethernet. You know, he's coming in with this technology of today, and these guys don't have electricity yet, you know? And the temptation in the real world is to put somebody down, and that's what can kill you as a geek, is that if you go in and, I mean, I remember bringing my my brand new iPod into the gym, and I showed it to a friend of mine, and I swear to God, this woman said, "What's an iPod?"
There you go.
And, you know, every fiber in my being is, what kind of an idiot are you? You know, but you can't do that. You just can't do that. Cabana Boy, could you get the phone, please? It's hard to get good help, Ron. I promised Ron I wouldn't make him laugh because he makes him cough, so.
Well, I think that in the long run, people will adjust to the technology, but it's really interesting that when you have especially these communications tools that come online, just how it's not always apparent how to best use them and how to make it fit into most people's lives.
Right, right. I was at my family reunion, as I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago, and my cousin Judy is blind, but she's been able to use JAWS, which is a screen reader for the PC that allows you to allows her to navigate the web and do some things. And I was thinking, boy, this is great. I'm going to get to talk to Judy all the time. And then she says, I said, "What's your email address?" And she gives it to me, and she says, "But I can't return your email till January." January? What, you can't get to the, what's the deal? And it turns out she runs a costume shop out of her house, and she has 1,500 costumes in her home, and her computer is simply behind them. So from now until January, she physically can't get to her computer. And, you know, it's just, of course... Now, Ron and I and my family, we went to Hawaii and brought 5 laptops with us to Hawaii because there were 5 of us. So kind of beyond our comprehension to not getting to your computer till January.
Yeah, that's just everyone's got their own priorities.
What I do like is I'm not finding that I have trouble communicating with people as a function of age. It's more the proclivity. Do they enjoy it? You know, people enjoy their computers, like my cousin Anne Marie. I'll be talking to her all the time. But people who just don't like it, you just can't.
It's true. It's true. And it's kind of probably not even computer specific, because back when you wrote letters, you had some people who just loved to sit down and dash off a couple of lines to you. And you had other people that you had to send one of those postcards with the check boxes, you know, "Are you alive? Check A, yes, B, no."
So you're just saying people are different in all aspects of our lives, not just technology, huh?
I think the technology is just another manifestation or another aspect of that. You know, it finds itself. Maybe it amplifies in some ways, you know, the quirks about your personality. And, you know, but certainly there's also the added, you know, how you interact with computers and stuff.
Right.
That's a new one.
You know, one thing I worry about is that I get to be too much of a fanatic. Well, I don't worry that much because clearly I am a fanatic on the topic. But
you really don't have to worry about that one.
But whether I'm a fanatic, you mean?
Yes.
But, you know, people give me a hard time because they say, "Oh, you've always got to have the gadget of the day." You know, I mean, I did have to get the iPod Nano within 45 minutes of when it was delivered to the Apple store. And I do understand I spent a lot of my money on gadgets, but the way I excuse myself is that I'm not fanatical about anything else. I am a woman, and I have one purse. I have been wearing the same pair of shoes to work 5 days a week for around 6 years now. I got a really good cobbler. I go get my shoes fixed, you know? How many women do you know who are like that? So I'm not fanatical. There's women who are fanatical about shoes, about purses. There's people who are fanatical about religion or politics. This just happens to be what I'm fanatical about.
Well, my only comment about that is that, you know, I think that like a lot of other things, the techno thing kind of, it's a bad rap sometimes. Even though it's true that people like you and I enjoy going out and getting cool gadgets and so forth. But to be quite honest with you, most of the things that I own actually affect my quality of life in some way. Mm. I rarely buy something that just sits on the table and spins away and, you know, it's usually something that I have a concrete reason for, And as an example, my recent adventure with the JBL OnStage external speakers with my iPod, where I finally discovered that my iPod had the alarm clock and I could actually wake up to a podcast or my own playlist instead of listening to the inanities of local radio here in LA in the morning.
We should explain what the JBL SoundStage is. Is a round speaker that you can plug your iPod into. Literally any iPod will plug into it in some fashion, some more easily than others. But it's a really nice speaker system. Runs about $150, and we have another Cabana boy. Kyle has joined us, bringing Ron now it's an alcoholic drink, Ron.
Yeah, this is where the quality of the podcast may suffer a bit.
Well, 25 minutes in before, could you hear him opening that? So one of the things I was thinking about in that was exactly that example. And actually, you're segueing very good into our useful versus pretty technology.
I was trying to do that, really.
Oh, it was a subtle segue.
Very subtle.
So, you don't ever buy something just because it's cool? I mean, I'm sorry, the Nano? I didn't need the Nano. I mean, it turns out it's going to fill a good need, but...
Well, I would probably be lying if I said that I never bought something just because it was cool. But it's pretty rare that I actually, spend any significant amount of money on something unless there was something in my life that wasn't right, that I'm somehow, filling a hole. Now, I will admit, there have been a few things where I looked at it and all of a sudden a hole appeared in my life. but that's not quite the same thing.
You know, that's funny. I'm sitting here having this conversation with you with using an iSight as a recorder. The iSight, for anybody who doesn't know, is a digital video camera. It's a FireWire camera invented by Apple. It's a real cute little gadget. It's about, 2.5-3 inches long, maybe an inch in diameter tube. And it's really, really cool. And for about a year and a half, I just wanted one. But I could not think of a gosh darn reason why I needed one. So Steve got it for me for Christmas. That solved my problem. And now look, I need it.
You need it. You're using it. You know, it filled that hole that appeared in your life.
Well, now the other thing I'm going to be able to do with it is talk to my daughter Lindsay when she's down at school down in San Diego. Because Ron bought her an iSight for graduation.
Yes, it's true. So sometimes I feed the geekdom by spending money on someone else for a change. So. But as far as the stuff that we would really use if it existed, the reason I came up with that was just because there are always these things I get in conversations with friends like yourself, and we start going off on, why Apple doesn't have this or somebody else doesn't have that. And I just thought that it would be good to, my first one on my list that would come up is I really, really, really want an iPod that's got wireless connection so that it can just do like the Airport Express and you can just play your tunes right directly into an Airport Express or something like that, and maybe download some stuff by Wi-Fi, right straight from iTunes without a computer.
See, when I think about wireless with them, I think about those headphones and how much they tangle. And I wouldn't mind an iPod where I didn't have the headphone tangling issue.
Well, actually, there have been people that have already been writing their requests, I guess, to Apple for a Bluetooth iPod.
That would that's certainly come up a few times. See, Ron, I think bigger than that when I think technologies I wish I existed. Okay, how about the transporter? I would really like to be able to go, okay, I'm at a meeting from 2 to 3, but at 3 o'clock, I have to be at my kid's parent-teacher conference. I'd like to be able to just go, beam me up, Scotty, and just jump over there, go have the meeting, and make it back in time for my 5 o'clock meeting.
Well, there's no doubt about that, although I think then I'll take it the next step, which is then I could live in Hawaii and work here in Los Angeles. The only thing I'd have to worry about there is having a watch or something that took care of my time zone issue, because it would be 2 or 3 time zones away, and so I'd have to be figuring out what time I'm supposed to get up and drop myself on the transporter to get over here in time for, the start of the day, and then what time I could leave.
Maybe you could have a Hawaii watch on your left arm and a LA watch on your right arm. You know, so you just look to the right if you're in one place and on the left in the other.
It's got to be something like that. But I'd vote for the transporter, too.
You know, a friend of mine took it up a notch. He said, well, okay, what if we can't come up with a transporter? What about avatars? What if you had like a holographic avatar that you could send to the parent-teacher conference, and the avatar knew what you were concerned about and could record basically what the teacher said that you needed to have an interaction with. If they had your brain, if they had all your knowledge, and they could accept information, and then you bring it back and you sync with it essentially, so now you know what's going on. And then he said, and then we started talking about it, and said, well, wait a minute, but what if the teacher actually had to be at the dentist's office right now, so the teacher sent an avatar too? Would we pretty soon have just avatars talking to each other and nobody was really there?
It reminds me of a scene in the movie Real Genius with Val Kilmer, where the kid is at a high-tech school and there's a huge auditorium where a boring teacher gives a boring lecture. And as he comes in at the beginning of the movie, there's a whole class, but there's one guy that's left a tape recorder, and it's just tape recording the guy. And by the end of the movie, the entire place is tape recorders, and the professor has been replaced with a tape player. So,
wait a minute. That's sort of like a podcast then.
That's right. That may have been the first podcast.
The circle of life continues. Are there any other technologies you wish we had today?
Well, I don't know. I wish we had good software. But that may be a pipe dream.
That's a little, yeah. Don't be crazy talk, Ron. Come on, bring it down. Bring it down to earth here.
Yeah, it's just that I've been a critic for a long time of software, that it's really still pretty much bad software, and that I'm waiting for another 20 years before the industry matures so that I can see something that, you know, you really don't have to think about and you don't have to worry about. And it just does what you need it to do.
You know, in terms of bad software, of course, Microsoft has to come to mind. And I think I might have talked about this in the last podcast. Stop me if I did, because you know how I repeat myself, right?
Well, I've listened to all of your podcasts, so of course I'll know.
Ah, there you go. So I was thinking about, think about iTunes 4.9. From 4.8 to 4.9 was just a point release for Apple, right? And they released the ability to catch podcasts within iTunes. Okay, podcatchers already existed, and the podcasting already existed, but they pulled together the community of whatever they said, 4,000 or 8,000 podcasters, and they built this gigantic library, which other people had already done, but they brought it to the masses. I mean, all of a sudden, many, many, many more people understood what podcasting was and started to get the advantage of it. When was the last time Microsoft came out with a change as big as that?
Well, that's a good question.
I mean, think about their products. This was a point release to one application that Apple gives away for free. What has Microsoft done that even compares to that in the last 4 years?
Well, they've had their monthly security patch.
Ah, the every Tuesday or whatever it is, third Tuesday of the month or something, I think it is.
Yeah, and I'd be kind of curious, in fact, to in terms of releases, what percentage of their total releases over the past 2 or 3 years has been nothing but security patches?
Well, even Service Pack 2 was the biggest thing they've done, and it was a security patch.
Pretty right? much,
I don't
yes.
believe there was functionality increase, was there?
Not much, if there was some.
Now, the Microsoft anti-spyware is a really, really good product, but of course, that's a security issue, and they bought the company that wrote it. So, I mean, I was going to try to not completely bash Microsoft in these my podcast, but it's, you know, such an easy target sometimes, you know?
Well, and to that end, I know that you've probably read this because you subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, but on the Wall Street Journal's website this week, they had an interesting article that was an interview basically talking about the guy who basically told Bill Gates and his executives and Ballmer that about a year ago that they were going to have to trash everything they had done with Longhorn and start over from scratch.
Oh.
And it's a fascinating story because that was one of the reasons they pushed that release back another year. And this guy was a real hardcore computer sci guy, and he told them some things that they really didn't want to hear about the process of writing software and so forth.
Hmm.
And so,
is Vista from scratch?
So Vista
being the new name for Longhorn,
right? So Vista is essentially they took it right down to the bare bones, and
really?
They started from scratch. And that's one of the reasons it's taken them 6 or 7 years now, assuming they stay on the schedule they've got.
Right. I did talk to a guy at Microsoft a couple of weeks ago, and he said they're now, you'll read in the Wall Street Journal, the second half of 2006. He said December 2006. So maybe he's just trying to set expectations to the back half, and if they come in early, that would be nice. You know, somebody made a chilling remark. I can't remember whether it was Adam Curry or Adam Christensen, but the only thing I can think of scarier than Bill Gates owning a monopoly would be Steve Jobs owning a monopoly. You know, I mean, as much as I like the Mac platform, I like the operating system, and I love the pretty hardware, that just sends a chill down my spine, doesn't it, you?
Well, it was someone long ago who said that power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And well, I think you can see it in a lot of CEOs. And
And Steve Jobs owning 3% of the market is already a frightening individual, so I don't think we need to see that. Let's move on to happier topics. So, how about penguins?
Well,
how do you feel about them?
You know, penguins are, you know, cute and cuddly, as evidenced by my screensaver here, which is the for the movie Madagascar, which opened earlier this year, the famous quote for the four commando penguins, cute and cuddly, boys, cute and cuddly.
Well, now, Ron, we can be tying all this kind of stuff together because there was a Wall Street Journal article about penguins a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, actually. They talked about the ability of penguins to recognize the mother's and father's voices and the mother's and father's to recognize the children's voices. So I might be getting this mixed up, but one of them sits on this, you know, raises the penguin while the other one goes off and like sleeps for a year or feeds for a year. I forget what they do.
It's the March of the Penguins.
The March of the Penguins, right? Well, they're gone. They get separated, mm-hmm. But the baby penguins can actually find the adult penguin by the sound they make, and they're all making their sounds at the same time.
It's amazing.
And they were talking about the ability of them to actually synthesize the sound. And do you know how they do that?
I don't know, although they talk about it a lot in the movie, The March of the Penguins. Clearly this is the year of the penguin, by the way. I have no idea what on the Chinese calendar it is, or even whether they have a penguin. I mean, there's the donkey and the chicken and all of those.
I know there's a rat.
There's a rat, you know. I think I was born in the year of the rat. But there should be a penguin. I've come around to that. But, I mean, between Madagascar with the animated penguins and The March of the Penguins and
the movie,
which is now the second highest grossing documentary ever. It's made $70 million, which was, I think, a shade more than Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt's last movie.
Well, I think I also saw that one weekend that it played, it was on a per-screen basis. It was out at the same time that Star Wars came out, and on a per-screen basis, it made more money than Star Wars. Of course,
it wouldn't
Star
surprise
Wars was
me.
Pretty bad. So, you know.
Well, I just have to say that the one thing is, if there is such a thing as reincarnation, and you can't come back as another person, I'm picking a penguin if I have a choice, okay? Penguins, after seeing this movie, seeing them march 70 miles through the Antarctic, and then on top of it all, when Hurricane Katrina hit Louisiana, hit New Orleans, the aquarium in New Orleans was completely devastated, and over 4,000 different sea animals were killed, unfortunately, ooh, when the generator went out.
Ooh.
And so, however, there are 19 penguins there in the aquarium, and all 19 of them survived the hurricane.
Really? So they got good survival instincts?
If they can survive hurricanes, floods, blizzards to minus 100 degrees in the Antarctic, and marching 70 miles with no cover, I want to come back as a penguin.
Not to mention, they can fly on their bellies down the slides, the snow slides, right? That looks fun.
I want to do that, too.
In fact, I really like that game on the, what's the game that came from Linux that's on?
Tux Racer.
Tux Racer. Yeah, that looks fun, doesn't it?
Not to mention that freeware thing where you have the Sasquatch hitting the penguin.
Yeah, that doesn't look so good for the penguin on that one, though, Ron.
I don't know. He seems to enjoy it.
Well, Ron, we're coming up on 39 minutes here. We've probably babbled on long enough. Did we cover all of our topics?
Well, I think we did allocate at least 10 seconds to string theory, didn't we?
Yeah, so, Ron, tell me everything you know about string theory.
Well, the only thing I know about string theory is it's this quantum mechanical model that all these super excellent physicists have, that says that by the time you get down to the bottom line, the entire universe is made up of strings, which to me means that if you do believe in a superior being, that that person is either like a violinist or perhaps a pianist. I'm not sure which.
Or really like spaghetti.
Maybe a guitarist. Or maybe like spaghetti.
And all I know about string theory is that my brother Jan told me once that he believes that the streets in Boston were based on string theory. Oh, there I go, making you cough again.
So I think that's the end of our string theory
That's section. Pretty much all we know about string theory. I'm glad we covered that. We can be sure not to have to come back to that.
And that sends us right into our other physics topic.
What was that? Oh, the hole in the space-time continuum. Yes, we have to spend 30 seconds on that, I guess. Well, my main question is, Ron, if there's holes in the space-time continuum, why do they call it a continuum?
I'll get back to you.
Thank you, Ron. It's been wonderful having you today.